to another episode of Wolfpack Woman. I'm Denise, and today we have Angela Frommi. I knew I was going to say that wrong. Frommi? It's like, yes. Like a thing I do. I just don't pronounce anyone's names right. She's based in St. Louis, Missouri, ex-heroin addict, and now a mother of three. Welcome, Angela. How are you doing?
Thank you so much. Doing great. Glad to be here.
Now, you know, we have our chats. This is going to be like an official chat because it's going to be recorded, or it is being recorded. So I thought, because I know that we talk a lot, but I feel like it's important for you to share your story, I guess, for people who are going through maybe a transition and feel like they might be in a place where they need some inspiration. And I think you will be able to give them that inspiration, as well as a different perspective on outlook on life. Over to you.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, where to start? I mean, to start, like, just about what, yeah, I mean, my addiction, I just always kind of had a personality where, I don't know, for some reason, I didn't want to be me. I didn't want to feel anything, to not feel, because for, you know, I think for humans, it's just hard to feel uncomfortable anyway, and life is just uncomfortable a lot of the time. So, and people just find whatever it is to help them, you know, or sort of be like a crutch for people to get through their daily life. And mine just happened to be substances. I chose substances. And it was like, it was never enough, because when you're looking to an outside substance to help your an inward condition, it never lasts. Just like material things don't last, vacations, whatever you're looking for, some type of experience or another person, a relationship, it doesn't stay with you, you know, just like our feelings come and go. If we think of happiness as a feeling, it's not a true lasting inner peace and happiness. So the substances would help me to feel better until the high was no longer present and I had to be with myself again.
It's almost like you are blocking the feeling, but you're looking for a good feeling.
Yes.
Constantly running away from the bad feeling.
Yeah. And it's a vicious cycle because of the guilt and the shame. And then it would cause me to run back to the substance again and again and again, just digging myself deeper and deeper into this hole, until it was like the pain had to outweigh the feeling of needing to get high. Like the consequences and the pain had to be greater than my fear of letting it go. Mm-hmm. And so I finally just got to a point where I felt like I couldn't bear any more pain. It was like I had met max capacity. And I was 22 and I'm 34 now. So I joined a 12-step program, and I had been going to 12-step program off and on before I officially stopped. You know, I went through my whole process where I was like lying and trying to still get away with drinking or using different things, while also maintaining an outward look of I'm doing the right thing. I'm going to meetings. I'm, you know, whatever.
So would people probably look at you and think that's what you were doing? Did you maintain like a facade that everything was okay?
I mean, it was obvious that things were not okay. So probably in my mind, I'm thinking I'm tricking people. But it was very obvious. You know, I was talking to a friend.
There's some people that do like what they're called microdosing now. So they'll take, even like mothers that they're talking about, like taking small amounts of like mushrooms just to get through the day, just to bear their children or whatever. And Yeah, was that something that you did, or just to get through the day of work, or?
No, mine was extreme.
Right.
So there's a difference, because I think that this is interesting that you brought up mushrooms and the microdosing, because I just watched a documentary about this.
Oh, really?
And I actually think that those types of things can be helpful and beneficial to people that are looking for alternatives to something like an antidepressant or things like that. They're doing research. I mean, I'm not a pro or an expert on it, but I do think there's something there that we need to look at. But no, that was not me. Mine was extreme. So although I would be able to get away with it at times, it wasn't long before I was getting caught up again. And it was like, I couldn't ever stay out of trouble. Like no matter how hard I tried, I always got caught. It was like, I just wasn't very smart about it. So my life looked, really messy and really chaotic and scary to a lot of people. So people tried to help, and I didn't want help at the time, but there was a point that came that I finally decided to surrender, and I got clean for the last time.
Were you living at home at the time, or had you moved out? Were you working?
I was living with my parents. Nope. You know what? Okay. It's interesting. So I was living with my parents, and they kicked me out because I couldn't stay clean. And I went and lived with a friend who was in recovery. And he really helped me at that time. And I still was using, though, off and on. And then I wrecked my car. And then that was the last time I used, and I still was living with him. And then shortly thereafter, I went to live with a boyfriend that I had, developed a relationship with during those first few months where I was very new and clean. So I lived with him for a while, but I had to do work release. So what that is here is they send you to jail for the night, and you get to work during the day. So you have to like stay at the jail overnight, and then you get to go to work during the day, and then you have to go back. I did that for like 90 days. Because otherwise, I mean, they didn't send me to prison. And I very well could have gone to prison. I don't know why I didn't. I'm just grateful. You know, I don't ask why anymore. I'm really just grateful for my experience, because I didn't need to go to prison. I had had enough pain. I knew what I needed to do. So I started going to meetings regularly and got a sponsor and started working steps. And I really just immersed myself in that world of just addicts, like recovering addicts. So we drank coffee and we smoked cigarettes, and we cussed a lot, and we shared our pain. And that was where I felt at home. You know, I just really felt at home, because that people understood me and didn't judge me. I could share whatever the hell I wanted to. And I just felt seen and heard, you know, for the first time. So that's what saved my life, was going there and crying and sharing and going to conventions and having fun and actually fellowshipping with people that we had that common bond, you know?
Yeah. And when you guys were sharing stories, what sort of stories were you hearing? Did they sound similar to yours, or were they from really bad backgrounds? Because I imagine your parents, your background wasn't bad.
Right. I couldn't find anywhere in my where I'd had any like major trauma. I didn't go through any sexual abuse or physical abuse or anything. I feel like I had a good childhood. I had opportunities that were given to me. I think that what happened was my parents were not there for me emotionally. And so that's the big key, because I had all these emotions and I didn't know how to deal. And it was so uncomfortable. And I had nowhere to feel safe expressing myself emotionally. So that's why I turned to substances. But a lot of people in the meetings, they came from trauma. They came from abuse and neglect and just horrible circumstances. So, yeah, I mean, I often questioned, like, do I even have a place here? Like, I would try to separate myself at times or find the differences between me and the people there. Like, maybe I wasn't as bad. And totally not true, because it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's just however you process your pain.
Yeah, exactly. You know? That's what I was going to say, because I feel like a lot of the point where I came to where I needed the emotional coaching, it's not like I had gone through all this stuff. It's because I didn't know how to process my emotions. And I was just like, crazy, because I couldn't move forward and do what I want. And that was like limiting, although not the same sort of emotional pain, but it was just like I was becoming a victim of it and couldn't get out. So I can very much relate to that. This is going to be totally a curveball, but do you think that because you were white and from a good family that you didn't go to prison?
Oh, wow. You know, I don't know, because it could be either way. Like, I don't think I could answer that yes or no. Like, I think that, but you know what? I do believe that, yeah, you know what? I don't know if that was the exact reason. But if there was a black person in my shoes, would they be more likely to go? Yes. Would they be more likely? Would they go every time? I don't know. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So, but yes, if there was a black person in my exact shoes, they would be more likely to be sent away. I believe that.
Okay. And so what is your relationship like with your parents now?
We have... obviously a much better relationship. You know, with parents, it's like, I sometimes feel like it, especially with my dad, he's not in touch with his emotions. So I often crave this deeper connection with my parents that I don't get it fulfilled. My dad really shuts down at a certain point and won't go beyond this threshold that he has set for, you know, probably very unconsciously, but I can't get anywhere with emotionally with him. But my mom, yeah, we have deeper conversations, and especially now with being the amount of time that I've been clean and then just the other work that I've done throughout my life to this point.
Do you have any siblings? Like, what were the outcome of the way that they felt emotionally?
I have a sister. She is 11 years older than me. And she actually lives with me right now. It's kind of an interesting dynamic, interesting situation there. But yeah, same deal with her. She was not there. The emotional part of things were not present for her either. So she has addictions too, but just in a different way. She didn't go down the exact path. We all have different variations of what we go through, but yeah, I see the same patterns in her for sure.
And so when you got clean and you did the 12 step program, what was it that changed after that? Where did you consciously think, I'm going to learn more about emotions or learn more about yourself? Like, what was the journey that you started to take on from there? Was it an effort to stay clean, or was it an effort to understand yourself more?
Mm-hmm. I think it started to go deeper. And I don't mean this in a negative way, but I started to outgrow some of my beliefs that I carried that were actually, I felt like that I adopted from that program. Like, I'm an addict. You know, every meeting it's, hi, my name's Angie, I'm an addict. Well, I'm labeling myself as an addict. And I started to realize, like, I don't necessarily want to slap that label on myself anymore. I don't necessarily think that I'm cured and I can go drink or do drugs. I mean, obviously, but I think that I got married to, I met my husband in recovery. And we started having kids, and once the kids came, it was like life got super busy. And it's not, I mean, some people would say it's not an excuse, but it was just my path. It's not an excuse. It was just my path. And I really, I had to grieve.
And Is he recovering like from alcohol or something? Or
same thing as me. We both had a heroin addiction. Yeah. And it's interesting because a lot of times that does not work out well when you go into a 12-step program and meet another fellow recovering addict because it can turn into a really bad situation. But we had really already created a foundation, each of us on our own. Mm-hmm. So, and we had never used together in the past. So we didn't have that going on. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, we really worked out. We're a really good team. And so we got married, we started having kids, and we just sort of took another path. We found, I started to find authors and people that really inspired me, like Marianne Williamson, and like Eckhart Tolle and Dr. Joe Dispenza and Rupert Spira, Muji, all of those spiritual teachers had a profound impact. And A Course in Miracles, that is another thing. I found a study group in our area. So we started going, we go to that every Tuesday night, and we've become really close with these five people that we meet with. And it's just special. And because I'd been searching for God forever, right? Searching for spirituality. What does it mean? What does this God concept even mean? And I was frustrated. And because, you know, when you're like searching for the truth, it can be really frustrating when it seems like everything that you've been presented with in the past has been misaligned, or it's like you can't resonate. You know, like I didn't resonate with religion. I couldn't put my heart wasn't fully in it. So
it's not something I think you're saying that really resonates with me. It's not religion and just God. I think the whole thing isn't something you can learn. It's something you have to experience, right?
Yeah. Very much so. Yeah. And I felt a contradiction within me. And so I couldn't base my life around that. And so when I finally found the truth, you know, my whole life changed, everything, my perception changed on life and death and just everything in between. And my experiences, I became more present. And it's important, especially when you have kids, because it's really hard to not want to just like jump off a cliff some days or just run away, especially with having that past of going straight to a substance.
I guess there was no sort of in between where you just like went from being clean to straight to having kids. Like, did you guys like take maybe 5 years to, I don't know, work and all that sort of stuff? Was
yeah, we did, because we knew each other for like, I don't even know, 3 years before we even started dating. But we dated for probably close to a year, and then we got married, and I think I was pregnant 2 years later. So I mean, there was some time in there where we took some vacations and we did things together and we had fun, and we were still going to meetings and fellowshipping with people and going to conventions and stuff during that time before we had kids. It was just once we started having babies, I don't know, life just, I don't know, something just changed. Yeah.
I mean, we didn't start having children till like over 10 years.
Oh, wow.
We're like, yeah, we really need someone else to join the gang.
Yeah, I hear that.
Shit. But,
Well, and now you wish you could sell them on the black market.
So two years doesn't seem like that much to me. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah, I hear that. Yeah, I know. It really wasn't that much time. It's not. I mean, when I really look at it, it's like we could have given ourselves a little more time. But, you know, I was excited and it was the next thing, you know, the next thing.
Well, exactly.
And we were, it's so funny because we're always looking for that next thing. Like, what's next? Okay, kids. What's next? Okay, a new house or a new this or a new. We're always looking outside of ourselves for things and experiences and people and all of that stuff to give us some sort of feeling. And so ever since I found this higher part of myself, I guess, which I call God, this consciousness or awareness, I've started to really try to look at these terms differently, look at the word happiness differently. Happiness isn't a feeling. It's not something you get from the outside. It's a state of mind, because I can still be happy in the midst of uncertainty. I can still be happy in the midst of hard things. Mm-hmm. You know, just because something's hard or uncertain doesn't mean that I have to suffer.
Just feel that.
Yeah. And that's hard for a human, though. That is hard for a human being to grasp, like to really not just, I mean, because like we can understand it conceptually, but to actually live life like that is super hard, because we're wired for comfort. Like, we just want to be comfortable. Mm-hmm. And anytime that we're not, it's like we think that means something's wrong.
Yeah.
But it just means that we're living. It just means that it's a lesson. We're growing. We're changing. Yeah. It's all for our growth.
It's funny you say that, because when growing up, it was always like, going to go to university, going to do this. Then around 27, 28, have kids. But then when you get to 27, 28, like maybe 30, 31, I just keep pushing it. But it was, there was always something, right? And then when you have kids, there's almost like you've run out of goals, and you're like, okay, so, I mean, that's when I guess started my business. And it was like, if you're not reaching a goal, you're not moving forward. And just as you were saying, so I guess that's when I started to feel that place of not being happy or not really in the moment, and really distracted and uncomfortable when I was doing something good and I really enjoyed it. It's like, I don't deserve it. Because I wasn't at the place that I wanted to be in order to achieve that. So when you made that realization, how did that click? Because sometimes you can read something or you can learn something, it never really registers until you either experience it or you're at the right place to understand it.
You're right, I know.
Positive means, it's like, you know, it's almost like a slap in the face if you don't get it, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, it just depends. Like, somebody could be sitting right next to you and there's a concept that's given, and the person next to you like totally resonates and they get it immediately and they start using it in their life. But you don't get it right then, because you're not supposed to hear it. It's not the right time. Mm-hmm. So I think that, I think it's through our pain that we come to the recognition more and more, because I often forget, like, I'm not my feelings and my emotions. I get attached to my feelings. I get attached to whatever's going on. And then I end up going back into the past or looking to the future instead of being right here, right now. So then I get to the end of the day and I go, oh man, like, I really could have done a better job. I could have really done a better job today of being more present or whatever. So it's like, I think it's times like that that I just, I remember more and more how important it is to me. And we always have the ability to start again, you know? So it's just a practice, because we're so trained and we're so used to thinking we need to be somewhere we're not, or, you know, we're striving to do something, or once we get here, we'll be happy, or, you know, we're here, but we need to be here. And we're always like looking for how we can bridge that gap and get to that, which isn't bad. It's just that, what if right here is okay for right now? What if it's okay? Not that we need to be complacent, but it all just depends on what you want to do.
And so how do you perceive God? Like, what does God mean to you? Like, what was that view change for you?
So God to me means the part of myself that knows my experience, because that's the part of me that can never be removed from me. It's my consciousness or my awareness, just being. That's what God is to me now. So the one who has a thought Like I have, I'm thinking about something, that say I have a negative thought. Okay. And then I catch it. I'm like, oh, okay. I had a thought. I'm the witness to that thought. Like, who is the one that had the thought? It's where does your mind go when that question is asked? Your mind sort of sinks into itself. It has nowhere to go. It, because God is not an object. There's nothing to focus on. I used to have this idea that God was some being that was bigger than me, separate from me, up in the sky maybe or something. And so I couldn't ever connect with that, because now I've realized that God is not separate from me. My personality, my thoughts, my feelings, my emotions are simply an expression of consciousness. It's consciousness itself just expressing itself in form. So when I take all that away, when I take away the thoughts, the feelings, the emotions, the perceptions, the memories, everything, what is remaining there? Just the knowing of them. And who is that one? It's like, and you have to pause. Like you can't just think about it with your mind. You actually have to pause and go into your experience to know what that is. So it's not something that can be taught. It's something that has to be experienced. And so
very deep, it's filter process, because it's quite hard. Even when you're saying that, I'm like, oh, what am I if I'm not my experience?
Right.
You know, I feel like there's an element of understanding of all of that, right? But yeah. All out, it almost like fucks with my head.
It does. It's like, because what is aware of your experiences?
Yeah.
What is aware of your experiences? Because you know you're not the experience, because experience comes and goes. You're done. You're still here, though, after the experience is over.
Yeah.
So that's a part that once we become more interested in that part of ourselves than the actual experience itself, the actual feeling of happiness from another person or whatever, once we become more interested in the knower of our experience, then that's what I believe is a truly deep relationship with God. And it just grows deeper and deeper the more that you practice that, the more that you go into that place.
Knowing who you are as well.
Say that again.
You know who you are more. Yes. Right?
Yes, because that's truly what we are. Like, we obviously have a body, we have a mind, and it's useful, and we use it just to navigate our daily lives, but it's not essential to us. You know, our thoughts come and go. They're not essential to what we are. We are still here, always.
Yeah, so in essence, it's the spirit that's within us.
Mm-hmm. That's what God is to me.
We get so bogged down with the body and what we're doing, mm-hmm. we kind of get stuck in that notion of that we are just our body.
Exactly.
And so before we come down and enter our body as a soul entity, we are that.
Yes.
That is who we are in essence. And we will then go into different bodies and different stages, learning, experiencing, and experiencing lessons and hardships. And then we take that out with us, and that's when we grow, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I know. Absolutely. Because it's like that. It answers all the questions, like, why are we here? I mean, there's no reason why we're here. We're just here because spontaneously, consciousness felt like experiencing itself. It's like, why does someone want to become a mom? Like, a mother doesn't need, a woman doesn't need to be a mother. A woman does not need that. She wants to birth a child. So it's the same with consciousness. Like, the question, why are we here? Because we want to.
But that's more of a question, like, as an individual question, not as a, like, the totality of, like, the human race.
It's just what I believe. I just believe that, consciousness itself has no reason for manifestation, for manifesting into a form. You know, I believe that we're here because it wanted to experience itself. Like when you're just, think of just this huge, vast consciousness, right? And it's beautiful, it's peaceful, there's nothing, it's wonderful, right? It's empty. How long could it be that way before it's like, what could I do?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's like, oh, I think I want to know myself better. How would I do that? How would it do that? It would manifest into a form, right? And it would express itself in the ways that all of us humans express ourselves. And all the lessons that we learn, all the pain that we experience, we want to experience the full spectrum of emotions in this life. Like we think we just want to be numb or content or just happy or whatever, but we don't really want that. We really want to go through the full spectrum of every emotion that we can experience because that is how we meet our full potential. So consciousness is like, yeah, I want to experience all of that. And I'm going to do that through you. Mm. And that's why I think we're here, just because
it's fun to that though as well, because it just made me think when you said that, that is why we only use like 5 to 10% of our consciousness and the rest is unconscious. So we're not supposed to know all the time, right? And the subconscious is like past lives, this life, everything in between, right?
We would go crazy, yeah. If we knew everything, we would go insane. So we can only know this through our limited, finite mind, what we know. And that's what we know, yeah. Because we have to filter our things out or we would go insane.
So what would you say to someone who's experiencing real emotional pain right now and they're listening to this and they feel like they've got a valid reason to feel this pain through, I guess, abuse, some sort of hurt?
Well, I think that, so the non-dual teachings, they are only for people who are at a particular place where they take an interest in exploring the nature of what they are. If you're going through some severe emotional pain or a trauma or anything like that, it has to be dealt with maybe on a professional level. Like I believe in therapy. I believe that if therapy is something, because therapy often focuses a lot on the past. So or even coaching, like emotional acceptance type of stuff. But like if you have to kind of see what works best for you, because some people say, well, I've done years of therapy and it's done nothing for me. I feel like I've gotten nowhere. Whereas somebody gets a life coach or something and they feel, oh my gosh, I've just overcome so much in the amount of time, in just years of what it took going through therapy. Mm-hmm. So you kind of have to see what works the best, but it's not reasonable to say, oh, just be the true, your true nature, you know, and only focus on what's real and what's not and what you're experiencing is an illusion. I mean, that's crazy. I would never, ever tell someone that. I would validate someone's experience and help them in whatever way is most needed at the moment, you know. Medication is necessary for people sometimes. It's something that we've created here that's useful for people, and I believe in it in certain cases. And same thing goes with therapy.
Yeah, so the non-dual teaching, how long have you been learning that?
So a couple years now. I've been really trying to learn more about it, and it's simply when I took an interest for some whatever reason, I took an interest in just the nature of reality. When I found out, oh, there's so much more here to life. Like I haven't been present most of my life. So what is it about being present? You know, what is that? And I started to investigate that. And I became very interested because I realized that that's what I've always been looking for. I've just been looking for myself. And what is myself? I started questioning, like, what are these things that I had no idea were right in front of me or right within me this whole time. And yes, it takes years. I mean, I believe it can take years for somebody to, if you take an interest really in consciousness or awareness, and because there are spiritual teachers out there that I listen to, and it's like every time I listen to them, I hear something new. I could listen to the same video, you know, different times throughout my life and go, oh my God, you know, and it just goes deeper and deeper and deeper. It's very surprising because like it seems sounds simple, right? Like, I'm not my thoughts, I'm not my emotions, I'm not, I'm this thing. But that's not it. It just goes so much more deep because you're going into your experience.
And when you kind of found this concept, is it something that you then do daily? I mean, how deep are you going? Where have you touched the surface with it, and where do you want to go?
Yeah, so I try to do it daily because with having three kids, it's very hard to stay present with all of the demands and just the what it takes from me emotionally and mentally, physically. I have had to, like, if my kid is yelling about something or crying or whatever, it depends on what the situation is, but a lot of times it's whining, unnecessary whining, okay? And so instead of getting emotionally attached to that and like trying to fix it or be like, what's wrong or blah, 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 like I often take a moment and I go into the essence of what I am and I remember and I feel the sensation in my body, like whatever's going on in my body, my kids, you know, whining about something again for the 100th time today. And I'm going, all right, I'm just here. And like, I hear the noise, right? Obviously I tend to my child if they are hurt or if they need something immediately, but it calms my central nervous system in that moment so that I'm not reactionary. I'm not like, what now? What do you need? I'm like running around frantically trying to do things because it doesn't help. And then he feeds off my energy and it just perpetuates the whole thing. So taking that moment to breathe, remember that I am just the knower of my experience. I'm not that emotion and I don't have to react to every single thing. Yeah. So where am I trying to go? I think this is so important for everybody, but moms, I can just totally, I feel for moms because that's where I'm at right now. I'm in this phase of life where it is just so hard to stay present. Mm-hmm. So if I could help other moms to experience their true nature, I think that our kids would, I mean, we would teach that to our kids. I mean, how important, I mean, what if our kids were taught this in school? Like how much, what would the world be like? I can't even imagine.
Yeah, I mean, it would be good.
I mean, it would so much less violence, like, because it calms your system and you don't react. You don't have that like knee-jerk reaction. It's hard to remember all the time though. I mean, not to say that I'm perfect or I don't react or have, and that's what I mean. Like I get to the end of the day and I'm like, man, and I, you know, I get to do it again tomorrow. I get to try again every day.
So I always start looking into transcendental
meditation.
And so the practice is every, like 20 minutes in the morning, 20 minutes in the evening. And what they did this study on, they've done many studies, but apparently did this one on youth in Chicago, like in a rundown area. And it changed the school, and there are certain schools, I think even in the UK, that do practice that, and I think parents send their kids especially there because of the results that they're getting academically. They're much higher because they practice that. So there's, I feel like there's so many things that we could incorporate just to bring that awareness and to I guess to calm the central nervous system is the main thing, right? And understand its response to any sort of predicted emotional triggers that if you don't have, then you don't really have a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's so important. Like it's one thing to know what we are, you know, but we still have to live in the world. We still have to experience a daily life, which is not, it's not comfortable a lot of the time. We have to do hard things. And so being able to stay calm in the midst of something really emotionally charged is a gift. You know, I think everybody really wants to have that emotional resiliency to life.
Yeah. It's funny how we don't actually get taught at school, like
I know, right?
Which would have stopped, you know, you wouldn't have had your thing. I might have had better relationships with people. And it's just crazy to think. Actually, for me, it wasn't necessarily bad relationships, but just taking things in, right? So you end up swallowing it and then just like
yes I know, emotions are like the number one thing that we experience as humans, and they're like the last, they're the one thing that we're taught to avoid the most. It's so sad. It's like we don't know shit about how to handle our emotions.
But it feels like with this whole COVID-19 scenario, there is much more awareness to the emotions, to the experience, I guess, because it's having such a knock-on effect, and it's such a point where you can't hide it anymore. You might have got away with hiding your anxiety before or your fear before, but now it's almost like there's an element of, well, is a valid fear and it's a valid anxiety because there's a genuine threat to everyone.
But, yeah, you can't hide anymore.
Yeah.
It's really hard to hide these days. There's so much going on.
Yeah. And I think that's a good thing, but it's going to be a bit like survival of the fittest. You either choose to accept it or choose to suffer.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's why I feel like this teaching is so important right now, because, you know, we don't have to believe all this stuff. You know, I mean, it's an illusion. Not that it's not real. It's absolutely happening and we're experiencing it. It's just that it's not as it seems. Nothing is as it seems. And we just really don't have to take life so seriously all the time. Like, we don't have to fear death. You know, we know what we are. We know we're eternal. We're not going to change like our feelings. We just are. We know we're here. We're experiencing.
Funny, because I say it's funny quite a lot. It's not funny. when we're here, obviously we don't remember our past lives. And we might have been here for 2,000 years.
I know.
It's like the first time we're doing anything. And then we have to relearn everything again. It's like, I guess it's like Groundhog Day.
I know, it's like amnesia. We just forget. We just start all over. Dang it. Let me make it this time. Let me not have to come back next time. Like, can I just learn all the lessons? Give me the lessons. I know.
Really? Do I have to do that?
Why did you choose to do this again?
Yeah.
I know. It is funny. Like, it is really funny, actually. Insane.
It is funny when you look at it like that, because I don't think, there's quite a lot of people that don't believe in things like that. I feel like I didn't really believe in things like that. But then the more I kind of start digging, it's like, no, that is what is the truth.
Right. Because why would we just go? I mean, like, it depends, like, how many times. But like, why would we just go back and then never? Of course, we're probably going to come back again to experience again, because that's what we do.
There's a lot of emotions that a lot of people have that they experience in this life, and they don't understand why they even have it in the first place. It'd be interesting to find out what your past life is. I know we've talked about it before, but if you must have suffered a lot of pain, so that the idea of pain just was like, I don't want
more pain.
maybe you've had a lifetime of suffering. And so it was like, no, you have to learn how to process your pain.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I was just going to say that, like, maybe I was, you know, I came down here to numb my pain, to learn that lesson. Like, you have to feel your pain. You have to face it with no, what is the word I'm looking for? Like, no crutch or whatever you would call that.
High five. You did it. Upgraded
onto the I've upgraded. Let's just see if I can go direct path next time, like straight to the feelings. No sidetracking for 20 years or however long.
But I mean, I know from like my parents that they have not, like, there's a certain amount of awareness of emotion, but any talk of it is like, don't want to listen. Yeah.
It's interesting, right? Like, what's it, I feel like we're just sort of, this is still new. Like, I mean, it's old in like the Eastern part of the world, but like here in the West, it's like, it's a newer concept. We're just now starting to see the truth in things. But really these teachings are ancient. It's so interesting. So I almost think that we've devolved.
Yeah, no, totally. You know. So I've been doing a bit of research, and ancient civilization, you really used to understand the emotions and use the earth and use the electromagnetic field to heal themselves. So certain parts of the world where the energy is higher, like vortexes, which is like places like Machu Picchu, Glastonbury in the UK, the pyramids, and it's like the earth chakras. And so people used to use that and heal. And then where, I guess, I don't know if it's like the whole medical science and understanding and then too much in the head, where instinctually, when your child is not well, you kind of know what's wrong with them. You know, even when the doctors might say, oh, there's nothing wrong, you're like, nah, something doesn't feel right. Like, you know, get a sense of it. And I guess maybe that's when they would start to do more, I guess, healing work and things. But there was a point I was going to make.
The ego. I think the ego kind of took over and took us to this, really into the mind.
Yeah.
And definitely. We got obsessed with the mind, obsessed with thoughts, obsessed with just, things too.
And experience.
And we forgot.
Yeah. We're learning slowly, surely.
We are learning, yes. Sometimes not very gracefully, but.
Exactly. Through tooth or nail. I was going to say something. Oh my God, it's so annoying. It's like tip of the tongue. Anyway, I'll probably remember when we end this. So is there anything you want to share before we go, and any last words of wisdom? I know you're full of wisdom, so.
Oh, thank you. Well, I just think that, if I were to say anything, like find whatever it is that you want to express in this world. Like, what is it that's calling you that really never seems to leave you alone? It's that thing that, you try to make an excuse for, or you try to say, nah, that didn't work out. And then it somehow comes knocking back on your door again. Mm-hmm. Like I think that's what we're here to do is not the only thing, but a very huge part of why we're here is to just express, be beautiful in our expression. Like, what is that for you? For me, it's painting. I'm in it when I'm painting, and it's something that I've tried to make excuses for. I've tried to put it down. I've tried to say, didn't work out, but it just comes back over and over again. And I just think that could help someone too, to get connected to themselves in such a profound way. Mm. We forget, we put our lives on hold. We put our dreams on hold. But why? When you're 95, I mean, you're going to wish that you did more of what you love.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think what I was going to say was, I get the sort of ancient civilizations when they did all of that. And when we look back at it now, it does correspond a lot to science, and there are like logical explanations to everything. And so it feels like there's been a misconception where spirituality, doing things, I guess, holistically has been kind of poo-pooed for a long time. And so I guess that's been a kind of block or a stopper, and people wouldn't maybe necessarily. And then there's religion, right? The actual organized religion. And I feel like that's also, I guess, in a, there has maybe been a negative part that that's played, because it hasn't really connected with people in the way it should. Mm-hmm. And the true sense of it is almost like, if you believe this way, or if you don't believe it, then, you know, bad things will happen to you. And that's not right, to guilt people and shame people into not doing something that just, you know, that, I mean, even, you know, with a child, you say a child don't do something, they're going to do it.
right, totally. I think that we've just become really reliant upon outside sources and other people to tell us what's right and wrong. And so we've forgotten that connection to ourselves and how important that is, because we are individuals and we have different ways of expressing ourselves. And if we're disconnected from our source, that higher part of ourself, then nothing ever really works out. And we can become very reliant upon pastors or teachers, other gurus, coaches, whatever. We can become reliant upon people to tell us what's right, what's wrong, what to do, who we are.
Yeah, and it's true, because then ultimately, whether they think they're doing the right thing or not, they're taking away your power, and they're in essence, again, if it's even where they think it's coming from a good place, it's manipulation, right?
Well, yeah. And it's like, I think that anybody that tells you that they have the answer for you is lying, you know, because we're not here to be that for people. We're here to lead people back to themselves.
Yeah.
Not to lead people to our way of thinking or our way of being. It's really, really important to discern, like to make that distinction between the ego and the truth,
as well as someone else's ego.
Right, exactly. Yeah, like we really need to learn what it feels like, what the experience is like to connect to ourselves. What does it feel like in your body when you know and the answer to something, when you know it's your intuition, it's your, you know, whatever that feels like for you, and to tune into that and know what that is and be confident in that and then follow through on that. That's what
strength behind that as well.
Yeah,
experience that. And yeah, there's no way I would give up my power ever again. And it always felt uncomfortable for me to even consider doing that to anybody else. And so if I go up, I want to bring up other people with me. So it's not a case of, you know,
right,
leading them off to a different path. Yeah, everyone has to rise up, because everyone can. That's the whole term abundance, right? There's everything for everyone.
Yes. And it's just empowering people, giving people permission, because we've forgotten. It's like we forget that we have this permission to be who we are and to do what we're called to do. So,
yeah. And the universe is infinite, right? So why should we limit our thinking as well?
Mm-hmm. Because
of circumstances and emotions.
Yeah, and we just have to recognize thoughts, like track our thoughts, because sometimes they're so unconscious. We don't even know we're limiting ourselves. It's like the thought happens so fast, and then we're on to feeling and then reacting. So catching the thought can be super hard if we're not even used to paying attention to that.
No, totally. Yeah. Especially with life, if you've got everything mapped out, you probably don't stop to think about any of these things at all, because...
No.
And it's not to the point where you actually stop. So have kids or become unemployed or something, and you're like, what have I been doing? Especially like always been interested in that sort of side, like all the spiritual stuff, but it always felt like I believed in it, even though I didn't know anything about it. But I never had the opportunity, like my sister would go out traveling and don't know, do like 4-week retreats and this, that, next thing. And I never felt like I could do it, even though I had no kids at the time. Like I just limited myself.
You did, time. Yeah.
So it's interesting. Anyway.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your time.
Yes, this was awesome. I
enjoyed speaking to you. Maybe we can.
I know. I love you. This was amazing. Thank you so much. Yeah. I love talking about this stuff.
Yeah. No, well, anytime you want to talk about it, I'm glad to have you on the show.
Yay.
Yay.
Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you. Bye, guys.
Bye.